Our first reading is from 1 Corinthians. It'll be chapter 12, verse 31, and we'll be going over into chapter 13, verse 13. It's entitled, Love is Indispensable. And yet I will show you the most excellent way. If I speak in the tongues of men or of angels, but do not have love, I am only a resounding gong or a clanging cymbal. If I have the gift of prophecy and can fathom all mysteries and all knowledge, and if I have faith that can move mountains, but do not have love, I am nothing. If I give all I possess to the poor and give over my body to hardship, that I may boast, but do not have love, I gain nothing. Love is patient, love is kind, it does not envy, it does not boast, it is not proud, it does not dishonor others, it is not self-seeking, it is not easily angered, it keeps no record of wrongs. Love does not delight in evil, but rejoices with the truth. It always protects, always trusts, always hopes, always perseveres. Love never fails, but where there are prophecies, they will cease. Where there are tongues, they will be stilled. Where there is knowledge, it will pass away. For we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when completeness comes, what is in part disappears. When I was a child, I talked like a child. I thought like a child. I reasoned like a child. When I became a man, I put the ways of childhood behind me. For now we only see a reflection in the mirror. Then we shall see face to face. Now I know in part, then I shall know fully, even as I am fully known. And now these three things remain, faith, hope, and love. But the greatest of all of these is love. Our next reading is John chapter 19, verses 25 to 27. Near the cross of Jesus stood his mother's sister Mary, the wife of Clopas, and Mary Magdalene. When Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to her, Woman, here is your son. And to the disciple, here is your mother. From that time on, this disciple took her into his home. This is the word of our Lord.
Thank you, Dan. So almost 26 years ago, my daughter Amber and I moved to Ottawa. It's hard to believe it's been that long. The plan was to move here for 1 year. When I moved here, of course, the first thing I knew I had to do was to find a home church. Based on a recommendation from friends back in Peterborough, I started attending Parkwood Presbyterian. They had been elders there when they lived in Ottawa years ago and still attended there when they came to town. So I attended Parkwood. The people were lovely, very welcoming, but it just didn't fit. So after a few weeks, maybe a couple of months, I started searching again. So at the time, I didn't have a car, so I had to find something that either I could walk to or bus to. The closest one was St. Stephen's, but I was reluctant for no other reason other than the name. My church in Peterborough was also St. Stephen's. And nothing could be as good as where I came from. Well, God had other plans for me there, obviously. So I decided to come here. So the day I walked in here with Amber, the usher, Robert Blair, said to me, you know, welcome to St. Stephen's and De Caloris. I was taken aback. So if anybody doesn't know, a few months before I moved to Ottawa, I had attended a Christian retreat called a Curcio. This Curcio, the whole premise of it is you spend 3 days with a group of women or men, depending, And then your fourth day is the rest of your life, your walk with Christ. While you're on this Crucio, when you complete it, you're given a very special cross to wear. It's represented in the Crucio community. And one of the terms that we use as a welcoming or a, you know, a term of endearment was De Caloris. So when Robert said to me, De Caloris, I was flabbergasted. I hadn't heard anybody say that outside of my Crucio. So I'm walking down the pew and I'm going, yeah, I hear you. So I come up and I take a seat and service goes on. And that day, the offering song, which ironically enough, and I did not realize this until I get here today, because I hadn't looked at all of the names of the songs, the offering song that day, which is exactly the same song we're singing today, again, God's still speaking to me, was We Give Thee But Thine Own. In Peterborough, that song had been the doxology for several months before I had moved. So it was like God was saying, you're home. So I sat in the pew, very close to where I normally sit now, said a small prayer to God. I said, thank you for bringing me to my new church family, to the family that I have yet to meet, because of course I had just got here. So we just read about, Dan just read about another family, the family that Jesus created while he was on the cross. He said to his mother, woman, behold your son. And to his precious disciple, he said, behold your mother. Simple but profound words, Jesus created a family. So let me ask you, how do you define family? Is it being related by blood? Or being adopted? Maybe it's being married and your spouse's family. It may be having common interests or goals that makes you feel like a family. What is it that makes you feel, that gives you that connection? The connection that I didn't have at Parkwood, but I felt it as soon as I walked in this place. Dan just mentioned it in Corinthians, love. Love is patient, love is kind, love is family, out of curiosity. And the dictionary, the first definition, of course, you know, every word has multiple definitions, but the first definition reads, the basic unit in society traditionally consisting of two parents rearing their children. Now, yeah, okay, that's the traditional definition of family. But I'm sure if I asked each one of you here, I would get different responses from everybody. Some would probably fall within the definitions of the dictionary, but I'm sure there would be other ones. As I was thinking about this service and thinking about my definition of family, beyond my biological and adoptive family, I started thinking, well, of course, I married into a new family almost 10 years ago. They became my family almost instantly. Beyond that, I have many friends. These friends have been through with me, some I've known for years, some just for a short while, but they have been there for me through thick and thin and have loved me and have become part of my family. As I said to Gracie and Richard, right here, my church family, you have all, over the last 26 years, nurtured me, watched me grow, helped me with good and bad things in my life, as well as helping Amber grow. This is my family. And within this family, I have a smaller family. It's called Session. We meet as a small group, and we meet once a month to talk about the business of the church. But we also try to meet every month or every 2 months for a fellowship, just to get together for dinner, to chat, to get to know one another. I'm proud to call each of the elders my friends and my family. Sorry, I lost my spot. Give me a second. But family isn't, so from what I've just described, and I'm sure you can all relate, family just isn't just about blood or genetics. It's about many other things. We all belong to different families. Some we're born into. Some we have developed and or created through the journeys of our life. But regardless of who, we can all say we belong to different families. Excuse me for a second. In John, when Jesus speaks to his mother and says, "Woman, here is your son," we know that John's not her son. There's no biology, there's no marriage. The same can be said when he says to the disciple, "Behold your mother." But yet here Jesus is at the end of his life. He's still showing his love. He wants to make sure his mother and his friend are cared for. He knows that family ties will hold them together through this and many other difficult times as they go on. Now, it's believed at this time that Joseph, Jesus' biological father, has passed away. And the tradition at that time is the eldest takes care of the widowed mother. Jesus being the eldest, he knew his time was coming to an end, so he needed to make sure his mother was cared for. Now, it should have been James or Jude or one of his other male siblings, but he knew that none of his half-brothers had committed to his mission. They were not disciples, and they had not accepted his claim. So he chose John out of a spiritual concern for his mother. Her unwavering support and belief in her son and her son's mission, she needed to have somebody that believed the same. So how many of you have had the honor, privilege, to be able to spend time with a loved one as their days are coming to an end? I think many of us have. Typically, when someone is coming to the end of their life, they begin looking outward. They want to care for those that they love, and they want to make sure that their family is cared for after they're gone. 5 years ago, the weeks leading up to my dad's death, he took each one of us aside, and he spoke to each of us individually. To some, it was to offer forgiveness. To others, it was to ask forgiveness. But to each of us, it was to tell us how much he loved us, how proud he was, and that he wished the best for us once he was gone. This is what Jesus did. He didn't have the opportunity to take his mother aside or his disciple aside. The best he could do was from the cross proclaim that now his mother and his son were family. In his final moments, he took care of the people closest to him the best he could. Jesus knew that whatever definition you use, family will be there for you. So beyond the actual definition, the physical definition of family, there are feelings that family invokes in many of us. For some, it's joy. It's joy at the thought of getting together with family, celebrating, laughing, joy, love. For others, the thought of family brings feelings of broken relationships, of sadness, of feelings of worthlessness or feeling trapped. For some, it may be sadness of longing for a family, children wanting to be adopted, an adult wanting to have a child but unable to conceive. Families can stir up the best and the worst in us, and sometimes they would make us do things that we typically would never do. But being a family is about love, grace, support, forgiveness. Now, I'm sure that many of you can relate that sometimes the family you're born into doesn't always show those traits. That sometimes you get into family battles that love and grace are not always on the menu. I know I have. But even amidst family battles, Jesus still wants us to forgive and love. Sometimes this is the hardest thing to do. But this is what we're told to do. Jesus' own relationship, when he was teaching about family, was complex. On one hand, it said that his mother is to be among those that were with him throughout his entire life, but there's very little said about the rest of his family. And in the New Testament, in Luke 14, Jesus places the community of those seeking the reign of God above all family bonds. It says, many people were traveling with Jesus, and he said to them, if you come to me but will not leave your family, you cannot be my follower. You must love me more than your father, mother, wife, children, sisters, or brothers, even more than your own life. So this can be a little confusing sometimes, but even though this passage, along with others, does say you need to leave everything to follow Jesus, it does not diminish the importance that Jesus puts on family. This is why he tells his mother and his friend that they are now mother and son. We are truly blessed to be a part of God's family. We can rest in his promise that we will always receive grace, forgiveness, and love. As the psalmist says, his love endures forever. No matter what we do, no matter what we say, where we go, God will always love us. His love endures forever. This is family, and we have been invited and welcomed into God's family with open arms. God's provision of family does not always happen through biology and genetics, but through the gift of the family of God. Those called God's children. In our baptism, we're made part of the household of faith and reminded that in God's family, water is thicker than blood. Sometimes the church becomes the greatest place to enact our love for one another in family. Jesus' words of wisdom, woman, behold your son, behold your mother, profoundly illustrates God's new family being born at the foot of the cross. Amen.